This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 796, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who understand that freedom or great power comes with great responsibility. Fanboy Pick League episode 796. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and out on bail is my co-host Josh Flanagan.
I am perfectly happy to play along with a suggestion in the prescribed improv way, but if you want to find a way to organically pepper in some details that I can play along with, that's fine. What is the version of events? Like, is it just a mystery why I was locked up?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you shouldn't. That's your own personal
business. Listen, on advice of my counsel, I'm obviously not going to say something in a public forum.
Plus, there's a litigation that's, you don't want to get involved with that either.
These people, I'm sorry, I can't. please just don't get me
just
started.
Just glad you're back. Glad you're back.
Listen, is a whale the same as a person? I don't know, but I can. You show me the law that says it is.
Right. It's murky.
That's why the trial's
happening.
Which is a perfect choice of terminology. It was very murky.
We are iFanboy, and everyone can read a bunch of comics, although not this week because it was a fifth week, and one of us picks one they like the best out of that bunch. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, the books from the week, the other books from the week, the patron pick. Sometimes it's the same as the pick of the week twice in a row for Josh. And we answer some listener mail. I think we'll have time. We should have time. We have fun, though.
Stop wasting that time.
Despite the tone of my voice, we do have fun. And here's your spoiler warning. It's just because it's 6:30 in the morning. Exercise some caution. Josh, you had the pick this week when there's only, I think, 5 books came out.
I didn't do the count, but I want to say total of less than 10.
You had less than 10. I started with 11. I ended up with 15.
We'll tell you what. I'm not going to count it while I'm here. Because I think that will waste everyone's time. But at some point in the show, I'll be like, 9! You'd be like, what? 9! Okay, so I have figured out how to game this system.
Yeah.
I figured, hey, I have to do less work if the patron pick or the pick of the week are the same. So the last 2 weeks, that's been the deal.
For you,
No, that's not the case. Dark Ages number 1 is the pick of the week. It is a story by Tom Taylor, I'm not sure if this is the first time he's written for Marvel, but it's the first time that he's written for Marvel since we were like, hey, check this guy out.
Since deceased.
Right. So art by Iban Coelho-d.
Sure.
color by Espen Grundehern.
This is in Minefield.
And of course, letters by Joe Caramagna. Joey Donuts. Joey, New York Times featured Free donuts, Joey Bag of Donuts. I don't know why, but Tom Taylor always seems to get matched with people who I've never heard of. And they're fine, but like when we read even Deceased at first, well, Trevor Hairston was somebody, but
I've heard of Ivan Coelho before.
I don't, it's not familiar to me. It didn't, that said, the work didn't appear to be somebody who didn't know what they were doing. So
no, he's been around. He's definitely like a Marvel guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
For some reason I've just missed him. So I didn't know what this was. I almost don't know if I would have kind of noticed it because it's kind of Dark Ages. It would have made me think of like metal or whatever. And it was kind of, but what we have here is a Marvel version of an alternate Marvel timeline. I guess this could be the future of Marvel, but probably not, where the Earth is being destroyed from within and the heroes notice it and they have to get together to take care of the threat, and there's a whole Marvelish story behind it, something goes right, but then something goes wrong, which I think is a nice way to do that, and all of the power, the electronics on Earth, are knocked out by a gigantic ongoing EMP that saves Earth, but also destroys the society
like
as we knew it.
Like the end of Escape from Los Angeles.
Escape from Los Angeles.
What was interesting was I obviously knew this book was coming because we're big Tom Taylor fans. I saw he was doing a Marvel quote-unquote event. This is a 6-issue miniseries, although I'm sure they're hoping that it just takes off like Deceased and they can do several miniseries. But I knew that it was about like a catastrophe. It's not Deceased, but in the same vein, like a catastrophe happens and the universe changes. I knew that, but I'd sort of forgotten what that meant. And so in the beginning, when this like creature is coming to the, or is inside the Earth that was imprisoned there, you know, millennia ago, and I was like, oh, it's going to destroy the Earth. And that's a creature. And then they beat it. And I was like, oh. And then by beating it, like you said, that with the EMP, they ends up taking out all technology in the planet. And I was like, oh, right. So what I mean is, like, I didn't know, I certainly forgot what was coming. So it took a couple of fun twists for me as a reader because I didn't know what was coming.
Yeah. So and, you know, the story here is that Tom Taylor excels at characterization and relationships between the characters and stories that have stakes. And I think that's the real difference between what happens in a lot of stuff that he doesn't necessarily have to contend with these otherworldly kind of books, is that he can have real stakes. So characters can be taken out. Characters can be lost. Characters can lose, you know, which isn't a thing that really happens, and lose in a meaningful way. So, you know, that gives him a lot of, it gives him a head start in terms of being a storyteller.
Oh, sure. I mean, look, I'm sure guys who aren't writing these alternate world tales are like, fuck that guy, because he can actually put, you know, lasting stakes in his stories. Mm-hmm. And we all get to sing his praises for it.
Well, I start to wonder if people who have really come up in the sort of mainstream system even have that ability. Like, they develop the instincts to work around and through that, which is its own kind of talent. But, you know, I wonder if something gets lost in that. And because Taylor's gotten to do these things so many times, he can construct them the same way. And at the same time, I also have to wonder, like, well, when is this formula going to run low? And it hasn't yet. I just made this pick of the week, but it did... It was very familiar. I was like, oh, okay, I get where we're at. But he's good enough at it that it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is, as a 6-issue miniseries, this is very much, it's not a prelude, but it's a lot of setup to get to where we're going, which is a world in the future, because then there's a time jump.
A Marvel universe.
A Marvel universe in the future where there's no technology at all. So, you know, great Watcher appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Storm has a very appropriate reaction to the Watcher showing up. And then, you know, the Strike Force that goes to the center of the Earth to stop this giant, I'm just going to Robotech thing. You know, they mostly die. The Thing dies. Scarlet Witch dies. Doctor Strange dies. And then Atlantis gets destroyed in the battle.
And those Division are big. Those are big characters awesome too.
Yeah.
Also, I really like the explanation. We assembled the strike team. They say why the Vision is there, and the Scarlet Witch, and Doctor Strange, and Invisible Woman, and the Thing, in case anything should be solved by hitting it really hard. I was like, "That's great. That's fantastic. That's good dialogue and fun Marvel stuff."
Yeah.
I will say.
And also, just before you say that,
yeah,
there was a really genuinely sad moment when the EMP goes off and all the technology stops. You know, we see the SHIELD helicarrier falling out of the sky and Iron Man falls out of the sky. And I thought what was clever was that Ant-Man was stuck in his giant form.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I even noticed that.
And then Vision's daughter dies. But I thought the saddest part was just in the middle, the regular dude with the pacemaker dies.
Yeah.
You know, I thought this was a compelling use of, like, this is the story. Let's find the buttons to push. Uh-huh. And he pushed them. And we had a moment of triumph for Peter's family. Peter's sort of the conduit for this whole story. His family's not, in fact, dead. He has two kids in this world. And then we jump to the future where Peter's got, somehow in 7 years, has got great temples. And
it's a rough world. Also, to be honestly, that shit comes on quick.
That's true. But I thought this was really fun. It made me feel like more events used to make me feel.
Yes, that's very, and that's really good.
That's how I felt about halfway through this book. I was like, oh, this is how I felt when I was a kid reading the first issue of Infinity Gauntlet. Like, I have a vivid memory of that because it was probably the first event where I was old enough to appreciate what I was reading. Mm-hmm. You know? You know, I read Secret Wars and Crisis Infinite Earths, but that was too young for really appreciate it. Like, Infinity Gauntlet was like the first real event that struck a chord with me. That and Armageddon 2001. And this beginning sort of made me feel that way. Like, there's a big stakes, people are dying, and what's going to happen? And I really had fun reading it.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't hurt that it was on a week where there was not a lot going on. Sure. And I don't even mean, like, there weren't a lot of books, but even the books that were out were, you know, they were fine. I would say it was an average of fine this week. So, you know, good placement on this. It's funny because I know that Tom Taylor has had a lot of success, and I think that his name, I don't even know, actually. I don't know if his name attracts attention. I don't know if it leads to sales. I don't know, but it's interesting to me.
Deceased did sell very, very well.
Right. But I don't know if that's because of his name.
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean? So going over to Marvel to do an event book. By the way, right away when you said six issues, I thought that's not enough. Which is really interesting because I don't think that a lot. And I just went, oh, really? Because I know what this guy can do over 18 issues or, you know, like however long the first
volume.
But Deceased
was only seven, I think.
Yeah, and but then
it was just a series of six-issue minis.
Right, but then there was the digital-only ones and there was, you know, other.
Right, I'm sure they're hoping this is like the same situation where there's going to be Dark Ages, The Return, or Dark Ages, Steampunk.
Yep.
So.
But it's odd that it was. Schedule-wise, it's kind of buried, but maybe that's on purpose. I don't really know. Because the fifth week, no one puts out their big gun on the fifth week. And I don't know why. It seems like that's a great time to do it, but it's
probably because you want your halo effect for the big gun. You want people to come in
for
the big gun and pick up other books.
I think that's
right. I really like the Iban Coelho art.
Great.
Especially the big sequence in the beginning where they go to the center of the earth, when things running at
thing I have seen in a long time. I love how Thing is drawn in this book.
Like he's like all exaggerated limbs and his face is wide open. It just seems like he's coming in for the big punch. Doesn't go his way. And then Vision, after Scarlet Witch gets killed, he's fucking pissed and he's flying right at this machine and it flies right to its head. The Unmaker, that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And it was a great. It was a great action sequence from this.
Yeah. Also, and this is not a thing that everybody can claim, there's kids in this book, and he draws them, and they look like kids. And the little kids look like little kids, and Val and Moon Girl, I think, you know, they look like what age they're supposed to be.
They got big heads and tiny bodies.
Yeah. That shouldn't. And they even gave Mary Jane a contemporary haircut. Like, so. Lots going on there.
The McFarlane 80s. I mean, you know, Watcher, you know, Unmaker. It just it has a big Marvel feel to it.
When the Watcher shows up, it's been a while to have the Watcher show up in a page like that, and it is, you know, it is composed perfectly. You know, like, look, you know, we're looking up at him. He's floating in the air. He's waving his hand. He looks.
This
like
is what I've been watching for. Oh, shit.
Yeah, no, it actually carried the effect that it's supposed to have because it hasn't been overdone. Also, I guess this is that page turn is the one instance when the stupid unseen worked for us. Because it was so good to see the real thing and not Cheney stupid ghost fury.
Right, right.
That you're like, oh, well, that's great. I would, you know, if I had one criticism, it's not even a criticism, but the last page turn is, you know, and then came the apocalypse. And of course you have 6 villains with apocalypse in the middle, but they're not villains. You see like a carnage ravage kind of whatever he is. And then,
A beast,
some kind of
She-Hulk.
And then Wolverine has the Lady Deathstrike, but also, or is that Reed Richards? That's Reed Richards.
Yes, it is.
And then She-Hulk. Yeah, so.
And Iron Man. Happened.
I guess, did Reed lost his whole family?
Yeah, they all died.
Did he lose, Johnny Storm?
I think so. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, but I was confused by that. But also, I see Apocalypse, and I'm like, I don't want that.
You know what was funny was this, and I don't want to spend much longer on this, but this literally set me off like on a 5-minute jag in my head where I try to figure out, are Peter's web shooters powered by electricity?
Yeah.
Because when it goes down, he goes down too because his web shooters are dead. But like, I don't think there's ever been a story where his web shooters run out of juice. They run out of web fluid all the time.
Sure.
But I was like, is it just engineering where he presses a button and it makes a lever move? Or?
It would make sense that over time they had been engineered. He knows a lot of people and it would be more reliable. You know what I mean? What I don't think was clear is that an EMP knocks out electricity.
Yeah.
It doesn't knock out technology. It doesn't. And then like there's a like what's the line between, there's batteries. Engineering and mechanical things that don't run on power per se. I think there was some allusion to steam powered something or other, like the things
Iron Man's gonna be steam powered.
Yeah. The thing they put on his arms, later that looks mechanical. So you have mechanical, which is a form of technology, but there's no
just electricity.
Yeah. So we'll see.
You know what? I really enjoyed the Avengers number 48.
That's what I came here to say.
I read Dark Ages last because it's my most anticipated book. But until that point, like there was a couple of other books. I know we talked. You just said it, and I don't disagree that it was kind of not an overly exciting week. But I really liked Avengers 48.
I was a page or so into it, and what we have is sort of like a Gorilla Man lamenting something in a bar.
Yes,
and I was like, well, that's Jason Aaron. The writing of that, I was like, what he's saying.
Yes.
Could have been in like Scalped. It was
his voice for the Gorilla Man is terrific. That's and this is all Gorilla Man plus She-Hulk, and I don't like that part, but I could read his Gorilla Man all day long.
Well, and the other thing is that what's compelling about Gorilla Man is I don't know what the fuck is going on with that character. Like, and not in a bad way. Like, he did a very bad thing. I don't know that it's incredibly clear why, and I don't know how to feel about him. In the good way, in the good narrative sense. Like, I can't make up my mind. His blade in here is blade-like, as he should be. I will always love the phrase, suckheads. That's hilarious. And, like, the Gorilla Man and She-Hulk out on a boat in the middle of the ocean. Like, it's ridiculous in the way that it should be. And then there's a two-page spread. Is this like supposed to be the Bermuda Triangle, basically, or is
it
some spot where you don't go?
It's the spot directly over Atlantis.
Okay.
So he said that the Atlanteans basically destroy any boats that go directly over the city.
Yeah.
I assume that's a defense situation, but so that's where they are.
It was a really good issue. The scripting of it was really spot on, which led me to think about like, well, what is it I don't like about this Avengers arc? And I don't think that it's bad. I don't think like it is at the heart. It's a large sprawling story. The stuff that's going on here was front loaded in the beginning. So it's not like it's from out of nowhere. I think what it is I've just had a hard time finding anything that I'm particularly interested in this specifically. I don't think it's faulty. I just kind of don't care about the elements that are moving around.
It's not compelling. I don't know why.
Yes.
It's the great mystery of comics. I don't know why Avengers is not compelling.
Yeah. I can't point to something and be like, oh, this is terrible. I don't feel that way. It's just not grabbing me. I've read 48 issues of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not, that's not nothing. This has been going on a long time. I should like it more. Maybe like the drama between the characters isn't all that interesting. And so when, now that you're focusing on the Gorilla Man and his sort of real conflict and how we're supposed to feel about him is conflicted, like that's the thing that grabs me.
Yeah, I don't know. I have spent a lot of time thinking about it and I just don't know the answer.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know why this book is any different than the New Avengers, or why it's any different than Roger Stern's Avengers in the 80s, or, you know, any of those books that were incredibly compelling and were must reads. I don't know why this one isn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Well, it'll be one of those. Yeah, it really is one of those mysteries, but it's not like I'm like, this book sucks. It's not that.
No, it doesn't. No.
So, yeah, well, I'm.
That's what's weird about it. Now, you have top, you know, Jason Aaron is a great art writer. You have a top tier artist, even if you're not always big fans of their style. Certainly not bad artists.
No. It's this issue had really great pages, and then other pages where I was like, I don't really like this style, but it was worth it for the ones that are. You know, like there's some really lovely pages in here. Javier Garon.
Geiger number 6 turned out to be a double sized issue. Ending the first arc of Geiger from Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, Brad Anderson,
that,
Rob Lee.
That disbelief is like, where's this Gary Frank been?
Yeah, seriously. He did all 6 issues, and this is basically 7 issues worth. Who knows when he started drawing it. But all I know is in the beginning, I was like, I'd read a Gary Frank war comic.
Fuck yeah.
When they flash back to the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, World War II, and the Vietnam War, I was like, oh, man, I'd read it, you know.
Can I tell you what happened here? Is that I was reading through my books, and you know, sometimes I'm distracted or I'm like, all right, I just plow through this one. And I turned to it and I saw the first page was, there's a Revolutionary War, a Civil War, and then a World War II panels, 3 panels. And I looked at it and I went, I got to pay attention to this. And I started reading something else. I was like, I'm not going to miss this. So, yeah.
So this was interesting. We wrapped up the first arc with Geiger and the two kids, and it doesn't go the way you expect. And it is kind of stories, but really the interesting thing was he seems to be building some sort of giant universe.
Yeah.
Some Geigerverse, as the kids say, in which we're being introduced to a bunch of new characters who are, I don't know what they are. They're like him. Like, at a time of great need, a character arises, and I guess the next book isn't even about Geiger. It's about Junkyard Joe, the robot from Vietnam. And then he shows us a timeline in the back where there's like Redcoat becomes immortal in 1776, and the Northerner in 1864, the Monster in 1944, the Junkyard Joe in 1972, American Widow X in 1997. And then, you know, the first Ghost, then the Unknown War, then Geiger in 2050. So I guess we're now in a world where we're exploring these singular characters. Although I can't imagine we're going to go completely away from this storyline, because it's not like the story ends. It's just that Geiger gets really messed up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I mean, it's like he can't help world building. And I guess the next special that comes out is going to be done by a bunch of different people, is what I think it said in the end. Yeah. You know, I still.
Also, by the end, we're in the future, because the young boy and then the kid with the one eye are adults.
Is that what that is? I couldn't tell. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was the daughter.
I'm glad. No, that's the kid with the leukemia and then the kid with one eye.
I'm glad that Ralphie didn't die.
Yeah.
I don't think that I fully understood. Well, who's the general at the end, though? Is that the daughter? Is that the girl?
It's hard to say.
That's what I was thinking.
Could be.
And she's with Tarzan.
I don't know what's going on in this book.
Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I have no idea what's going on, but I know that, like, there's a plan, and I know enough to trust this creator to do a thing, and he can't help but world build, apparently. Yeah. I don't fully understand Geiger as a character and what the deal is, you know? Oh, right.
This Junkyard Joe book just says Gary Frank, Jeff Johns, Gary Frank, and Brad Anderson.
Yep. No, there's it's in the essay.
Oh, okay.
Whatever. I don't think I read the essay. It says, our first 80-page giant will be released in November.
Geiger 80-page giant. Yeah,
Brian,
yeah.
Brian Hitch, Jay Ferber, Peter Tomasi, Sean Galloway, Janet Harvey, Poinsack Pinchot. It'll be one of those.
The Junkyard Joe issue is going to just be Gary Frank and Tim Johns.
Yep.
I don't know, man.
At some point, his Gary Frank's long lead will be up. Like
right. He started 10 years ago.
I know.
I don't know. It's compelling. Even if I don't exactly understand everything that's going on.
Yes, agree. And it's really well done. I mean, which goes without saying, but...
I ended up really, caring about the characters, the two kids that Geiger was protecting, his great sacrifice to keep them safe. And when his boron sticks broke, whatever they're made of,
I was like,
oh,
rods.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I was genuinely worried.
I did have some questions about, radiation doesn't tend to be quite so locally contained, even with your rods. So you're in a car with the dude, and he's it's glowing. Like, by the time you can see the glowing, it's too late. And so he's like, and then at one point, he's in whatever the wasteland is, and he looks like he's exploding. And the kids are like 20 feet away. And he's like, get back. And I was like, dude, it doesn't matter. That's not...
Like Johnny Storm, that conversation we had by Johnny Storm the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you read Captain Marvel 48?
I did.
I'm sorry, 32. I don't know what's going on with me lately with the numbers.
I did. I jumped on Captain Marvel a while ago, and I would say that, you've talked about this and we've talked about this. It's a great superhero book. It's a great Captain Marvel book. But I think that one of the things that's great about it is that it seems to be written in a way that you could jump on at any point and start.
Well, that was why I wanted to bring this up. So Kelly Thompson, Sergio DeVia, Sean Parsons, Jesus Bertoff, and Clayton Kyles. This is a great jumping on point. If you at all haven't read this book and you're curious and you like Captain Marvel, you like Kelly Thompson, this is a great spot to jump on the book. It's the first issue of the last of the Marvels storyline in which all of the Captain Marvel characters are going to team up. Mm-hmm. So against an unknown force trying to kill them all. So, it starts with Carol Danvers, and then you may know this. Actually, you may know this Captain Marvel more than I would.
Phylavel?
Yeah.
Not really. I'm aware of her.
She was around in the early 2000s. You were reading the Marvel Cosmic books at those times. So
yeah,
I didn't know if she was
something to do with that Annihilation and sort of stuff. But I don't really know.
I didn't know her at all. I had to look her up. I was like, I don't know who this person is at all. But so she's fighting this person in a suit that she thinks is one person, but it's revealed to be the Captain Marvel from the early 2000s.
That suit, though, wasn't that the suit?
Yeah, it was from earlier in the series.
Right, but it was the one that she got because of the King in Black. Like, that's the King in Black Captain Marvel.
And so she and Tony Stark figure out that maybe the Captain Marvels are being targeted. So she has to run off to find Monica Rambeau, and she goes to find Miss Marvel, and Miss Marvel's had already been attacked or is in the process of being attacked. So this seems like it's going to be a big team up mm-hmm. of the Marvel character, which I think is exciting. I like all those characters that I know of. And, this is a great, really fun superhero book, and people should check it out
I think my thoughts about it are that I had jumped on at some point and I was planning to go back and read it from the beginning, and I just didn't, but it didn't matter. It was like when I was a kid and you just pick up a book and read it, and other shit was going on and did it happen before, but you just sort of went with it. And this book works like that. I don't know how that's different than other books, but it does work that way. But I also really like the jump from the last arc was like she was learning magic and fighting what's her name, the sorceress or
Enchantress.
Enchantress, that's the one. And then this is completely back the other way. But they're, both really interesting. And then the last thing I have to say about this issue is that the art by Sergio Davila, stay with me here, I don't think it was great, but I think it was perfect.
That makes sense.
Like it's not like, oh my God, this art's blowing me away, but this art is exactly what it should be. It worked perfectly with the kind of story that we were doing. It was full of goshiness, is what it was. It was good old superhero art, and I thought that it worked really well.
Her hair is all over the place.
That's true.
Meaning, like, sometimes it looks like this, and sometimes it looks like this.
Well, there's one where her hair is all over the place, but then she's flying forward, and it's matted down. I was like, well, that makes sense. It would do that.
Yes, but like look at page 20 in a digital reader. Look at that 60s Dolly Parton hair going on. in that one panel. That's not happening in any other panel.
It's windy wherever she is.
I guess.
It seems to flow with the direction that she is moving. But it also, when she's hovering, it's like she's in a pool. That's how he seems to be drawing it. Like, if she's not hovering, it has gravity.
Right.
But if she's up in the air.
Yeah.
Well, maybe she moved. Maybe. How does she fly? Does she have a localized gravity field? I don't know.
She's a superhero.
It's true.
That's how she flies.
Let us take a moment to thank the patrons and entreat others who have been thinking. Is that the right word? I'm not sure.
Sure.
To be part of the patron community. I'll keep this quick, I promise. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can go to help support the show if that is the thing that is important to you. We have unlocked many shows together, leading to more but enjoyable work for us over here at iFanboy HQ to do. Talk Splodes, Book Splodes, Media Splodes, YouTube shows getting uploaded, monthly patron hangouts, the communities over in Discord and in Facebook, all good stuff. We have a new stretch goal. If we hit our next goal, we will add a comic book TV show special edition to our roster of shows. That doesn't mean we cover every comic book show or every episode, but at the end of a given season, if it's one that we think we can talk about, we will do that. There will be plenty for us to put out if that's the case. In my mind, that's already on the schedule. It isn't. Now, we have not achieved that, but I've already been like, oh, okay, we'll do this one. Okay.
I know. I've already started asking people, are you watching the show? And I was like, wait, hold on.
Yeah, you did that to me. I think that's what it was. I think the other day you said that to me, and I was like, oh, okay, we'll do a show on it. And I thought, wait, I don't have to do a show on it. Back off, Kilpatrick. The next stretch goal after that is the return of a quarterly video barbecue show like we used to do in the old days. How that works, we don't know, but it'll be fine. Thank you to everybody who does that. It's a great addition to our lives, and we appreciate everybody who makes the effort, and we really take it very seriously to make sure that it's worth it for you. As you could tell by the enormous production that's been put into this show. Actually, we really do think about that stuff. iFanboy.threadless.com is where you can buy t-shirts. I don't even know if this number is right. There are 9 designs.
No, that's the old number.
Okay, yeah, I think I forgot to change that. I did add the new one. So we have, in the last month or so, put 3...
There's 11 or 12?
I don't know. But there's 3 more things in there that weren't there before, which would make it 12. One of them is a vintage... a legacy design, the Power and Responsibility shirt. And we added 2 more, a very simple I Love Comics.
We're missing one in this list.
Okay. There's a very simple I Love Comics shirt that you can see over there at ifanboy.threadless.com. And the Clint is Dead shirt, which is about as graphic a shirt as we've ever made, I think. Many of the shirts are word-based. But this one, it codifies the idea that Clint Barton is dead. As you know him, in many different ways, it is an all-encompassing Clint Barton theory. It's a Clint Barton way of life. It's a Clint Barton platform. He's dead. And there's a shirt that says that. And I kind of like how over-the-top and silly it is.
Oh, no, there isn't one missing. We have 11 designs, yeah. And there's a 12th being worked on. There's 11 designs currently in the store. That's right.
So you can add those to shirts, sweatshirts, tank tops, baby shirts, panties, phone covers, bath mats, notebooks, all sorts of crap you can put them on, and Threadless does really good stuff, so you can feel comfortable about that.
Hey, it's Connor jumping in to tell you that there's a sale going on right now on Threadless at our Threadless store. All of our designs are on sale. Everything in the store is on sale. It's celebrating Labor Day here in America. Regular tees are $15. Everything else is reduced in price. Literally everything in the store. Sale ends September 12th at 5 p.m. Central. So you can check it all out, ifanboy.threadless.com. And now back to the show.
You can go to ifanboy.com/support for PayPal link, just directions, straight donations if you don't want to deal with any of that. And ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you will find links to buy the books that we talk about on Booksplode. And every week, the music and the pick of the week is linked on our show page at ifanboy.com. And then finally, just a general link if you're buying stuff through there and you use that affiliate link. That's pretty awesome for us. So there. Hey, do you happen to be reading the digital-only... oh, boy, those are not the right credits on that. The Joker Presents a Puzzle Box.
No, but at first I was like, oh, they're writing it? But I was like...
No, it's Matthew Rosenberg and Jesus Marino.
No, I'm not
I think it's
this.
I think it's him. I know it's Rosenberg. It's just this little sort of digital-only story. These are probably, I'd say, half an issue a piece. And the idea
is... They come out weekly.
Jesus Marino. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they got Joker in a box. And what's his name? Bullock and Gordon are in there. And they're trying to get him to tell him who took out all of the villains. Like, there was a thing, mm-hmm. and something took out all of the villains and is taking them down. And basically, it's been 7 issues of him saying, I'll get to it, but further, let me get back to my story. And the cops are just like, tell us who did it! And he's like, it's all part of it. And it goes on and on, and it's basically revealing this mystery of a thing that happened, and all the villains are going against each other. And I saw Rosenberg's name on it. And that,
well, you know, he's completely moved over to DC. He's not doing any Marvel work right now. He's got like 4 DC books.
He's just, you know, I saw his name on it. I thought, okay, I'm going to read a book that says the Joker on it, because, mm-hmm. You know, he writes great comics, and they're intelligent and they're interesting. And this has also proved to be the case. And it's been really fun. This is Jesus Marino and Vanessa Del Rey, actually 2 different artists on it. You know, he does great characters. He does great dialogue. And it's also a really good setup. I look forward to this every time an issue comes out, which is weekly. So it's really fun, this nice little installment. I feel like we're 7 of these in. I don't feel like I'm necessarily any closer to knowing what the hell is going on, but it is really fun to read. It's worth it, right? If you thought about it. You might really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Midnighter 2021 Annual #1. The only reason I stuck this in here, I read everything I could find to read this week because I needed to. and the fact is, I really want to like a Midnighter story, and I haven't in some time. I think maybe he always worked best in the context of the Authority on its own, you know?
Yeah, I struggle with all of these Wildstorm characters. I don't know that I care about them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, you know, tried to read here and there, like, you know, there was the Midnighter backup story that's been going on for a while in one of the books I'm reading. And the thing is, like, I just don't care about any of these characters, like you said, outside of the context of 2002's Authority book. Mm-hmm. I just don't. I don't know why.
I've read other stuff from there. There's like Garth Ennis did a bunch of stories with the Authority, and they're in there and really interesting. The point being, this seems to be the follow up and finish to that story that's been going on in the back of, I want to say, Justice League.
It's one book. I don't know. Some book.
Action
some book
comics.
Maybe. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
So that sounds right.
Art by Michael Avon Oeming. Story by Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad. And this actually concludes that other story, which I had no handle on whatsoever. But I really enjoyed this. I thought I was able to sort of make sense of what had come before, which I was really, I'd even stop really reading it or paying attention. I sort of flipped through it. And in this one, it's kind of a cool time travel thing where Midnighter has a villain in his head, because he was trying to defeat him, and he sort of took his computer in or whatever. Now the villain is talking to him, and he is with Shiloh, I don't know his last name, the new Mr. Miracle.
Shiloh Norman.
Yeah, Shiloh Norman. And basically this Midnighter is from a little bit in the future, and he's come back to stop something from help, but he didn't tell anybody what was going on. So Apollo is like, what the hell's going on? And he's like, I am your Midnighter. I'm just from a little in the future, and we're trying to rescue your Midnighter who's stuck in a boom tube or something like that. And the whole time he's arguing with the villain in his head, but then they're also fighting the villain in real time, you know. Anyway,
was it good?
Yeah, it was. It was really like it was really cool to see something that made no sense to me and then have it make sense. And mm-hmm. I thought it was a good conclusion to a thing that I didn't fully understand. It was pretty good. It was pretty fun. And I recognized the characters because it wasn't like in the context of Batman running around. Apollo and Midnight over there, the villain was somebody I didn't know. Trojan, you know, and even the Mr. Miracle was like a different Mr. Miracle. So it gave it room to just be what it is. And, you know, Apollo and Midnight are one of the all time great comic book couples, as far as I'm concerned. And it doesn't get done well or enough in the right way, I think, lately. So it felt familiar. It was good.
I suspect, and listeners who bought this issue in paper form, that issue being Batman Superman 2021 Annual #1, was that this was a flip book.
I could see that.
This was probably a flip book because there's another cover
in it.
It's a Batman story, and then there's a Superman story, and then in the middle there's a twisty page that I think you could read either way that connects the stories together. Like, you can see how the film strips would touch from opposite sides if it was a flip book. So I suspect this was a flip book.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the final issue of the terrific Gene Luen Yang 7-issue run on this book. And then the features art by Francisco Francavilla, who does the Superman side of the story, and Paul Pelletier, who does the Batman and Robin side of the story. And this follows the characters that we've met in this book, the old-timey versions, the sort of 40s movie serial versions of Superman and Batman, as Superman is they switch worlds because there's problems in each world that only they can solve. So Superman goes to Batman's world, Batman and Robin go to Superman's world, and Superman fights a very Bryan Cranston and Breaking Bad looking Lex Luthor, and Batman and Robin deal with the never-ending cup of coffee that Gordon was drinking.
It didn't make any sense at all. He did a spit take, but it was like the world's largest vomit.
Here's the question. How much coffee was currently in his mouth?
And it was at least a gallon and a half.
Did he chug it? But was holding it all in his mouth? He spits out a liter of coffee.
Also, you're looking at the table. Look how many donuts are on that table.
Oh, yeah.
That's a shitload of donuts.
The bit that I liked in the Batman side was that with no real crime in Gotham is the safest city in America, mm-hmm. The Gordon and all the cops are super soft, and Batman's pissed about it. It's like, this Gordon sucks.
I want to say two things in general about this book, is that I don't think that people appreciate enough the genius work that Gene Yang is doing here.
I know that
like, I don't think his series is going to go much further. I think it already got canceled.
This is it. This is the final issue.
Yeah. But it took a little bit to get on board. But once I did, I was like, oh, this is brilliant. This is so thoughtful and engaging and interesting. And it is the characters, you know, at essence. And
you put a lot of thought to the structure of it.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And two, the two covers that are on this are among the worst and most boring covers I have seen in professional comics in a long time. And what the hell?
Yeah. Not great.
The Joker puzzle box covers, which are digital only for like 10-page stories, are better and more well-designed than this. And this Brian Hitch, I don't know what the hell. Brian Hitch, his cover used to be like a thing to look forward to, and now he just doesn't seem to give a shit. And it's very sad. Sorry. It was really like, ugh. But the issue was wonderful. The whole thing was wonderful.
Yeah. I wanted to mention Aquaman 80th anniversary 100-page super spectacular number one, only because, and not go through every story like we have done in the past, but to say that this was easily the most disappointing of the 80th anniversary issues they've done so far. And I love Aquaman. It's one of my favorite characters. I was really looking forward to this. And I think the most disappointing thing was that I think all but two of the stories took place in the present. And it's like, well, if you're celebrating his 80 years of history, do stories throughout the whole time. I mean, there was one sort of 60s inspired story, but they didn't really lean into it. There could have been like a Justice League Detroit story. There was no story that took place during the Peter David 90s run, which is still the most important and impactful Aquaman run of all time. There was no in 90s Aquaman. You couldn't get Peter David and Scott McDaniel to do 9 pages.
I read this and went all the way through it, and it was so fucking boring. I was like, you've got this character, and everybody says this character is boring, so do something with him. Finally, also, and this is important, I think that putting tattoos on this character that match Jason Momoa's real-life tattoos is right fucking up there with the blue glowing spider.
And they've also, he starts talking about it. He calls some guy dude.
Yep.
And I was like,
it's not good. Don't do it. I thought that the Black Manta, is it Tempest? Is that what this kid's called now?
Yeah, Aqualad is not Tempest, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it is. I thought that was a good story. I thought that was the most compelling thing in the whole thing by Jeff Johns.
Oh.
And Paul Pelletier.
By Jeff?
Yeah.
That's Aqualad. Aqualad is...
He's actually named Aqualad in this?
Well, there's the original Aqualad. Garth is now Tempest, and there's
new
Aqualad.
That. Okay. Well, whatever that kid's name is, the Black Manta's son.
Yeah. He's Aqualad, yes.
And honestly, that whole story was basically two dudes talking in the snow, but character-wise, writing-wise, it was the most compelling of the stuff in here, I think.
So there were two stories in here that were like previews for new books coming out. One was a Black Manta book, and one was the new Aquaman book.
Right, which I do not care about.
Yeah, and then there was you know, there was a couple of things like had some good art in it, but overall, it was just seemed like the same story over and over again because they were all taking place in the present.
It was so boring.
Do something else.
Yep.
Show me year one Aquaman. Show me, you know, they did one story when he had the early 90s magical ocean camouflage suit. But like that was really just a little lip service to his history. It was just kind of disappointing that they wouldn't really lean into this is your 80th anniversary issue to really celebrate the history of it. And it was just a huge misfire, which was a bummer.
Yep.
So those are the comics we wanted to talk about. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. And if you're a patron, and every patron can do so, and they voted for Dark Ages number one by a huge margin. It was like a 3-1 shot over the number two book. And so they wanted us to read it. We read it. It was pick of the week. Let's do ratings on it, Josh.
Ratings.
Dark Ages number one out of five.
4.
4.2.
Ooh. Yeah, I was thinking about 4.25, but it's a real good start. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't
solid.
Very solid. Very, very solid. Very entertaining. Yeah. Not a full home run, but
sticking with it.
Yes.
Honestly. Yes, yes, yes. So that's Dark Ages number one, patreon.com/ifanboy. If you want to vote out a book to the rundown, any patron can do so. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show, like these four patrons.
John Morris has the ability to remove or add a phobia to someone.
Oh, shit.
So
that's
cool. Somebody's like, I don't know if I want to go up there. And he would remove the fear of heights.
Interesting.
If there was somebody who, I don't know, I mean, it could go either way, but he can add or remove them. It would be pretty vicious to give somebody a phobia in a given situation.
Sure, but
if they were being chased in, you know, all of a sudden you're being chased through the streets and you give somebody agoraphobia.
That'd be devastating.
Right. But it saves you. Awesome. I don't know. Add or remove phobias.
Jason Smalling knows everyone's name. Everybody.
God, so, I don't have that power.
Walks into a room, knows everyone's name in the room. Looks at a photograph from 1874, knows everyone's name in the photograph.
Wow.
He just knows everyone's name.
That could solve a lot of mysteries. Like,
yes, it could.
Show him that blurry Bigfoot photo.
Or the several, is this Billy the Kid photos?
Yeah, like, or the photo of Lincoln's last inauguration.
Right. He knows all those people in the photo. Huh. Is John Wilkes Booth there? He's right there.
Yeah.
He knows everyone's name.
There's D.B. Cooper. What? He's right there. Ben Christian can turn any part of his body into an adorable oversized foam appendage. So like if he goes to a sporting event, he doesn't have to buy one of those things.
Sure.
And he can also do lots of different hand signals, not just the point if he wants to.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, all of his appendages can be.
It's just his limbs?
Yep.
Or yeah. Also,
I mean,
can he do other parts of him into foam appendages?
He could, but it's tasteless.
Robert Sheridan, at Robert's lowest moments, his greatest moments of self-doubt and fear, Ted Lasso will appear.
Well, that's just great.
And give him a pep talk and get him back on track. But only if it's truest moments of low. Not just like, oh, man.
You're not stuck in traffic.
No.
You're going to get through this. Don't worry about it.
But like, God, what's going on with the world? It's society's crumbling. And, you know, there's nothing good. And then Ted will appear and remind you that there is good in the world.
I wish I could think of aphorisms that he would say on the spot, but I can't.
This is only he can do it. That's why.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/ifanboy. Those patrons gave it the $5 or higher level or higher. I just said that. Wow. They gave the $5 or higher level, and they got the superpower live on the show. Hey, look, we have some email time, Josh.
Hey there.
Maybe even all of them.
Brandon says, lately, you've been using the Gosh scale, which is good old superheroes, and I would like to know where Electro falls on that scale so that I can properly adjust my frame of reference. This is an excellent question. It's an excellent question. As you know, you should know if you're listening to this, if you were to rate something, you know, and if one is Electro.
Well, if you rate costumes.
Sure. But.
Yeah, that's what the best scale is.
Well, you could apply it to other things. Like, how was that steak? you know, if one is Electro, you know, but 10 is also Electro. I'm going to give this an 8.
That's the beauty of this, of the scale, is that Electro is 1 and he is 10.
Yeah. So on the Gosh scale, I would say that either 1 or 10 is probably the way to go, don't you think?
Yeah, oh, Electro, like, definitely look at 1.
Yeah, but like if you look at that comic, you know, like if you were going to rate that by Electro, that's a 10.
And a 1.
Obviously.
That's the beauty of the scale.
Mm-hmm. I hope that we cleared that up for you, Brandon.
Ethan J. from Virginia. I am curious about the constant disinterest in, quote, horror books. I've only been listening since the mid-300s.
Decade.
So maybe I'm mischaracterizing your past tastes, but my impression has been that horror is bad, but Vertigo was good. It seems like a lot of the Vertigo books you have loved would not be compelling today. If it arrived today, I wonder if you guys would like Preacher number 1, or would the fantastical elements of A Voice of God and a punk vampire be a distraction from a story of a preacher struggling to reconcile his faith with a shit-kicking past?
God, that's a great description you just had there.
have your tastes changed, or is it market saturation and contempt of the familiar? I've been thinking about this for 2 months since Nice House on the Lake number 1 that came out. I would not call Preacher a horror book just because there's a vampire in it. It's a Western.
It's absolutely a Western.
Yeah.
With other elements, other genre elements that are done both.
But it's at its core, it's a Western book.
Yes. But yeah. So I think
Blade is an Avengers. That does not make Avengers a horror book.
No. So I think that it goes back to this. Horror books. All right. neither you nor I are into horror as a genre, specifically horror movies.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the classics. I've seen Friday the 13th, and I've seen A Nightmare on Elm Street, and I've seen Scream.
But it's not your jam.
No, I don't go see The Conjuring or, you know, what The Haunting of Emily Rose or what any of those movies. I don't have any interest, zero interest in any of those movies.
Now, that doesn't mean that as a genre of horror, we immediately rule anything. Oh, that's horror. I don't listen to country music. I'm not going to listen to that. That's not a thing that is happening. It means that, you know, anything can overcome that. There are excellent horror films. Have you ever seen The Omen? The Omen is fucking amazing. The Shining is amazing. Jaws, my favorite movie of all time, is a horror movie. But there's different ways to do it. And there is a certain bit where it's almost like we use this umbrella term horror to describe stuff. But I think there's genres of horror. I think Saw is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life, but people seem to love it. I don't understand a lot of what makes horror horror, but I think there's different ways that they can approach it, and then that horror thing gets given to it. So
there's also the comic book tropes of horror that I just don't care about, like demon-y stories or you know, monster-y stories. Although I can, it depends again on the execution, but for the most part, you know, there's like a whole I think mid-range of comic book horror that I just find boring.
Yeah,
really, really boring.
I mean, I think we just read that Ed Pisker book, the Red Room one, and that was just gory, because that's the thing, is like some horror stuff's just gory shit and I have no interest in that. You know, I don't like jump scares. Mm-hmm. And I know that people do. Like, I hate that feeling. So I tend to stay away from that. It doesn't really happen in comics, but like that's the thing about horror movies I don't like and never liked. But there's another thing that's happening in this email, this question, is that we're equating Vertigo with horror. And I think that that's a misnomer. There are elements of the horror genre in a lot of Vertigo books from a given era. I mean, like Hellblazer is one of my favorite books of all time. And there's elements of horror books there, but there's also a lot else there.
Swamp Thing too.
Swamp Thing.
That was pre-Vertigo, but it's folded into Vertigo.
Yeah, and I would say that as that book gets to be like, because every time Swamp Thing comes back, it's a slightly different version of itself. So sometimes it's more horror-y, sometimes it's more political, sometimes it's a combination of all those things. You know, Alan Moore's Swamp Thing book, which is the best version of it I've ever read.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a horror book, but it's real, real good. So, you know, who's to say?
It also didn't fall into the tropes. I mean, it's just like there are.
Oh, that's actually good.
I don't know. It's hard. Like, I'm thinking about Vertigo books that I like, you know, Scalped, Why the Last Man. That's sci-fi and crime.
Yeah.
You know, Vertigo did a lot more. I mean, I don't know. You tell me, it was Lucifer a horror book?
Not really. It was more like a fantasy, you know.
Fables wasn't a horror book.
No. They're genre mashups in a way.
But there's one I was thinking of that I was going to ask you about. Hellboy. For a long time on the show, you read every Hellboy book that came out. It's Hellboy horror.
No. No, again, like Hellboy's, fantasy. Yeah, it's more adventure. Like fantasy and, yeah, adventure and is crime. It's all sorts of things. That was the thing that makes Hellboy interesting. There's elements of horror in there, but it's not like you're walking around the corner. Like in horror, like somebody's going to get killed horribly and it's going to be, you know, like that awful thing and whatever people get out of that. And that wasn't a thing that was in Hellboy. That's not the deal. That did happen in Hellblazer. That would be a thing, mm-hmm. You know, but your basic genre idea of horror as a comic book, you know, it's just not a thing we get off on. I had a thing and it's gone.
I mean, there are things we like, you know, that we read the Joe Hill books, yeah. And the one I really liked was really a tribute to 80s horror, mm-hmm. Which, you know, would be, like I said, the classic stuff, the slasher at the camp, that kind of thing. And
slasher as a genre is the thing I don't care for at all. So yeah, if that was in a comic book, but
that wasn't even really, there was no slasher in that particular book, but that was more the thing it was paying tribute to, right. was the movies of the 80s.
And also, but I think, you know, you and I have, and this is, I don't know if we came up together on this, but we just happened to agree serendipitously, but, there's certain genre tropes that, you know, like when we talk about adding a supernatural element into a thing that doesn't need a supernatural element, you know, I think that annoys both of us. And that can fall under that horror thing.
I think there was a period of time where the patrons in a several weeks in a row picked like a, you know, what I would call mid-range horror books as the patron pick and just wasn't interesting to me.
Right.
I don't really care about.
I know what I was going to say. I think fans of the genre, if you really like that kind of stuff, and I know plenty of people who do, part of what they're attracted to with it is the genre tropes, meaning mm-hmm. that the thing where the girl decides to go check what's in the closet, even though, you know, everybody goes, don't do that, but they want that to happen. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is the thing that is not going to attract me, but it will people who like it. So it's like, some people really like guitar solos, so they want to listen to music with lots of guitar solos. But if you don't, then you're just not going to be into it. It doesn't mean you don't, you know, you'd eschew the whole thing. But so I guess what I'm getting at is, like, if you can make that interesting to a person, you know, and not just give them the thing that they want, does that make sense?
Like, yeah, I mean, it all comes down to personal taste and the things that you are find interesting or not interesting. And I just don't find, you know, I find like classic stuff interesting, like, you know, Universal monster movies I like, but like, you know, monster movies now don't really excite me all that much.
No.
Monster comics now don't really excite me all that much, unless they're done really, really well. Done really well, then all doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's true. I remember being really intrigued by that movie It Follows, because it was a creepy idea, and it was, but also, ultimately, like, if I watch a horror movie, a lot of times in the end, I'm left like kind of like, eh. Like I don't find there. A lot of times, the conclusions aren't satisfying because they could be like, it was a monster. Do you remember the what was that series on HBO in the last couple of years? The Richard Price and Stephen King had a great cast.
The Outsider, or something.
The Outsider, and like the first half of it was great, but by the end, it was like it's a supernatural monster, and it's so not satisfying. As an ending to me, you know.
I'm trying to scroll through the picture and picks to see what they were, but it's too far back. But you know, like movies like It, I don't care about It. I would never choose to watch It. I just don't care. It's not what I'm interested in.
Yeah, I've read a couple of Stephen King books.
I like Stephen King.
I like his writing a lot, but I like his non-horror because I've read a couple. You know, enough of the horror ones to know that like I don't really care about those.
Yeah, I mean, I like Stephen King. Like, I like The Green Mile. I liked The Stand, which I think is more supernatural, you know, adventure sci-fi. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't think I've never read Carrie or seen Carrie. I've never like that whole side of.
He thought of Carrie while he was a janitor at the place I went to high school. Mm. There's a little thing.
It's just like I'm just not interested in those kind of stories. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm sure if someone said, "Hey, read this book," I'm sure I'd like it. Because he's a good writer, but
It's the same thing though. Like you don't, you know, if you're out there, you don't necessarily like reading history books on a given president. Well, I do. You know, like that's what I get out of it. Or it's even like I love natural disaster movies, and the more cliched that they are, the more they give you that, the better they are. And like, that's not for everybody. Those are not good movies. Like that's the thing. Like I think horror is exactly the same way.
Yeah, I think that's just the tension we have also with like someone like Scott Snyder's work, where you know we read like all of his books come out, but something like Witches or whatever, it's just like ultimately not really my thing.
Mm-hmm. But yeah,
it's tough. I realize we paint horror with a giant brush, and there's a lot of nuance within horror. But for the most part, we're just talking about sort of mid-level demon monstery comics that we just don't care about.
Mm-hmm. Books that get mileage out of the fact that they are horror books, rather than being,
because horror fans are the most loyal fans of any genre in everything. I mean, the horror films are one of the last films that are guaranteed to make money.
That's interesting. Just like metal. Yeah. Like music, I mean, like it's. I think those are related.
Yeah. So, what do you want to do? You're in charge.
Let's move along. We can keep that. I don't think that's necessary.
All right. Well, thank you to Brandon and Ethan for writing in. contact@fanboy.com. You can write in there to get your email on the show. Also, to get into the Media Explode show, and if you are writing in for Media Explode, please put Media Explode in the title of the email or the subject line. That way, we know what it's for. And also, speaking of subject lines, episode 800 is just 4 weeks away. So we're now gathering emails for episode 800, and you've started writing in. So thank you if you've done it already. To have your email considered to be on episode 800, which is, of course, the all-email spectacular, if you're new to the show and you haven't heard one of those yet. It's about 2 to 3 hours of all emails. So if you want to get your email on the show, talk about any subject you want, just make sure 800 is in the subject line so we know what it's for. And thank you for that.
Here's my tiny bit of advice based on that last question. You should think of something that Connor and I are not aligned on, so that we're not just backing each other up saying a thing that is monolithic. And I'm not saying I want you to get us to fight, but I get a thing like, oh, these guys have just made up their mind. They agree about whatever. There's lots of things we don't agree on, but it's probably a way to have a conversation that isn't just us defending ourselves to you. Because I feel we've done that a little lately.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Well, oh, wait, are we going to argue about this?
Yes. So out now on the podcast feed behind this show, you will find Special Edition Batman The Long Halloween Part 2 right behind the show. Paul and I talked about the second part of the two-part Batman The Long Halloween animated films without Ryan Haupt, our third leg of the tripod that is the Animated Brain Trust. You may have seen on social media that he just had a baby, or his wife did. He didn't do shit. So he has a newborn. He probably won't be on shows for a while, so that's why he wasn't on that show. And there you go. Congratulations to Ryan and his lovely wife Julie for their child. And then behind that show, you'll find Booksplode.
I checked in yesterday, by the way. Status still cute.
Still cute, and I do check in again. He's still tired. Yes. Booksplode, True Believer: The Rise and Fall of Stan Lee by Abraham Reisman is our Booksplode that's on the feed behind a special edition show. And then coming up this month, Talksplode, Mediasplode, Patron Hangout, and Pick of the Week 800 live. And the live stream will be on October 1st. Time to be determined. But if you're thinking about hanging out with us, because we're going to live stream for everyone, Pick of the 800 is going to be on October 1st, which is a Friday. Put that in your calendar. But Josh has a talk. This is a Talksplode month. Is this the one you have predetermined? Is this the one?
Yeah,
you have
already? I had that. But here's the thing that happens. You say,
you don't
hey,
need to justify it. It's hard.
No. This is the thing. You know what it's reminding me of is that I'm getting ghosted. Is what's happening. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to somebody. Hey, you want to go out sometime? And they go, sure. And then they just disappear. I can't tell you how many times it's happened to me. But no, I have this month's a sure thing, and. That's going to happen. Ooh, it'll be real.
You asked the sure thing out.
Yeah, I'm not worried about this month.
You asked who was the character in Grease that got pregnant? I forget. It's too early.
I don't know at all.
Brain is not working.
It's a person I communicate with regularly, so I'm not too worried about it.
All right. So again, you'll have a Talksplode, a Mediasplode, the Patron Hangout if you're a patron. And a note on that is that normally we do those towards the end of the month, but because we have the live stream on October 1st. We probably don't want to do back-to-back live hangouts just because it can be tiring. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it takes a lot out of you. So it'll probably be more towards the beginning or middle of the month this month. And then Pickle League 800 is October 1st, like I said. And I just to mention, so you don't ask, but you probably will because you're not listening to this part of the show. But Shang-Chi is out. Shang-Chi, as we found out now, it's called Shang-Chi, is out. But it's only in theaters, and Josh and I are not going to the theaters. So we won't be reviewing that until it hits streaming in 45 days. So you can look for that at some point whenever it hits Disney Plus, but not now. I had several people ask me to come to the movies with them, and I said, I'm not going to the movies. Are you out of your mind?
I might go. But that's because there's nobody here.
Right. So look for that review at some point later, but not now. Same thing will happen when the next Marvel movie comes out that's only in theaters. I can't think of what that is. Oh, Eternals.
Mm-hmm. Head over to ifanbar.com. You can find all of our shows, our vast history of comic book writing from all of our talented writers from the past. There's a whole lot of stuff there. You can click on that podcast tab and go down to the special edition thing, and there's so much in there. 90 something interviews, a ton of animated shows, reviewed and talked about, movies, things like that. Very cool. You can follow us individually at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram or J. Flanagan on Instagram. Of course, there's iFan. I skipped a part, but I'm going back. There is iFanboy Comics on Instagram. There's Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out there. And we always post about when the shows do come out, not just the pick of the week, but all the special editions, which are a little more random. You don't know when to expect those. So you want to follow those and see that, oh, look at this. There's a show. But if you're subscribed to the RSS feed, do they even call it that anymore?
I don't even know.
You'll get them that way. So make sure
you got a guy back there does that.
It's a guy. Is everything going okay, Sheldon? Yeah, I got it, boss.
Oh, now we're a morning zoo show.
Sheldon and Carol are married. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird that they secret from us for so long.
Carol's really good at her job in HR. She doesn't talk about those sort of things. So
I'm sure that she's got all the paperwork filled out for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
We should find out.
You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. We're re-uploading. We're re-uploading old video shows that we did. And at the end of them, we'll start doing new ones. That's a lie. That's a lie. I felt compelled to say it, but I want to make very clear that is totally not going to happen. This past week, you will see mini... the new comics preview for, this feels so long ago, June 25th, 2008. You can see what was coming out that week. We'll tell you all about it. We did a show on Wildstorm, which is wildly out of date now, I'm sure.
That was the second show. The first show we did on Wildstorm was about the new Wildstorm, and we read all their new books, and this was about the history of Wildstorms, going back to Jim Lee and Wildcats and everything.
Which is interesting. Yeah. There is an anthology show on John Cash, I See a Darkness.
I call him John. Johnny Cash's I See a Dark, the book, the biography book, but graphic novel about Johnny Cash.
Comic book storytelling, I imagine that's me. And original art, I imagine that's Ron.
Yes.
So those are the anthology shows where we each did our own little segment. I'd be terrified to watch myself go back and explain comic book storytelling.
Well, use Darwin Cook as an example, so I'm sure it's good.
Oh, okay. It's good to go.
So if you like the show, please leave a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts or if you listen to your podcast, please word of mouth if anybody asks you about what podcast you listen to. We appreciate when everyone says iFanboy. Thank you very much. Spreading the word is the best way to help us grow. And that's it for this week's show. I am Connor.
I'm Josh. Stay safe out there. Do what Clark, Peter, Bruce, Diana, Carol, do what they would do, which is invariably the right thing. And when they're thinking of others, that's what you should do.